everybody. Welcome to the podcast, Guys Learning Japanese. How's it going, Nick?
It's going good. How are you?
Awesome. So for today's topic, I would like to talk about the transitions or the different levels when you're learning Japanese. So how about we separate this into roughly five or six levels? Let's start with newbie, beginner, lower intermediate, upper intermediate, and advanced. After advanced, I guess you could have native. But that's six levels. So tell us about your newbie phase.
My newbie phase began when I went to Japan about 7 years ago, and I was working as a language school, and I thought it's sort of, I didn't know any Japanese at all when I set foot in the country, and then I thought this is kind of pathetic, and so I bought myself some extremely simple books. I remember very clearly when I first discovered how to say words like what and why and where. Really great words to know. And I would study from very simple Romaji dictionaries that I'd bought in Japan. I would sometimes just read the dictionary and try and learn, because I didn't know what words were valuable and what words weren't. And so I'd go through and generally pick out ones I thought might have been okay, and studied, 10 a day or something like that. I'm not sure if it ever worked. And I didn't really do any revision in Anki or any programs like that. So that was the very, very, very beginning. And then that after I left Japan, which I did after 6 months, I left Japan and went back to Australia, and then stayed in Australia for about another maybe year and a half without any Japanese at all. And then I got into a course at a university, and as an elective I was allowed, I think it was two electives or something like that outside of my major. And so Japanese fitted in nicely with the rest of my sort of timetable. So I decided to take the Japanese, whatever it was called, 1A or something like that, probably it was called. And then I was a real gun at it. I was really good at it because I'd essentially already done most of that work. I already knew the difference between, say, for instance, polite form and plain form. And I knew some very basic words. So I could go really well in Japanese 1A in school. And so that really gave me a lot of confidence. And then essentially that confidence carried over then into a second term at the university. And we were often doing, hiragana tests. And I think in the second semester, we started studying things like katakana, for example. I don't think we did any kanji until maybe the following year. And then, so that was my newbie stage, was originally Japan, and then getting into university and being in that sort of environment with a teacher and everything like that. How was your newbie phase?
First, before I get into it, I'm going to explain that we're not going to get into the origins in this show. We're just talking about the phases today.
So my first
step, I guess, was probably just buying a Japanese-English-English-Japanese dictionary. And every now and then, I just looked up words and that, and I tried to remember them. I had no idea of the pronunciation or anything like that, but it was just going through the dictionary and occasionally learning new words. And then sometime after that, a guy that I used to trade games with, and we used to go to the same karate class, this guy introduced me to a girl that was teaching Japanese. She was doing Japanese, teaching Japanese as a course. And she was looking for some people to teach. And he introduced me to her. And I met with her for about an hour a week for about a month or two. And we just met in the food court of a mall. And we went over little kids' storybooks. And she taught me the pronunciation and how to read some hiragana. And she taught me some words. And it was just very simple. I guess the majority of the time that I spent with her was just me asking her questions about Japan. Mm. Like culture and society and what was popular when you were a kid and what's popular now, things like that. Just trying to learn more about the culture. I guess so
I take it she could speak English fairly well then.
Yeah, she's pretty good. She wasn't anything like a native speaker. Like, you could tell that she wasn't native on the phone. But she could communicate pretty well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just learning about the culture first, then the linguistics second. But linguistically, all I really learned from her was, like, pronunciation and how to read some hiragana. That's about it. I didn't really pick up that many words from her. But, yeah, that's about it for a newbie for me.
Yeah. And how about beginner? How did you transition into beginner?
For beginner, well, through that girl, I just became more interested in Japan, so I kind of wanted to learn more. And unfortunately, my university didn't offer any Japanese classes, so I did a bit of research and I found out that a university not too far from mine offered Japanese classes. So I negotiated with the dean of my university. I negotiated to have the credits that I earned at the other university to transfer back to my university and to work towards my degree. I was majoring in sociology, but I guess with all the Japanese courses that I took, I guess you could say I minored in Japanese. Mm. So I started taking a beginner Japanese class. It's a one-year class. So that means, in Canada, that means, I guess, from September to April, roughly. And it was 3 hours a week. And in that class, we started with learning hiragana first, how to read and write hiragana. And then through that, we just started learning vocabulary, greetings, and simple stuff like that. And then next, we moved on to katakana, and then a little bit of kanji after that. We were using the textbook called Japanese for Busy People 1.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever seen this book?
I've seen it on websites like Amazon and on people's lists online for books that they liked when they were, you know, learning Japanese. But I don't think I've ever seen it in person. No.
Okay. Overall, I guess it's good for a beginner, but it's pretty formal. Like, I think the expressions that you learn in that will not be very useful for you if you're planning to just socialize with Japanese people at, like, a bar or at, like, some kind of social function. But if you're in a work environment, a very formal environment, I guess this book is pretty good. But yeah, so basically in that class, we used that book, and we got to the end of it, and I did all the homework, and I ended up getting like an A++ in the first year of Japanese. I was just really into it. I did all the recommended reading, and I made sure to never miss a class, but I never did anything beyond what was recommended. How about you? What was your beginner phase like?
Yeah, well, it sounds very similar to that. I didn't do much of the much extra work. I had classes for about maybe 3 hours a week. How about yourself?
Yeah, same, 3 hours a week.
Yeah, I'd say 3 to 4 hours, and then I would just go to those classes and study like a lot of the other people that I was with. Study for about 15 minutes before the test. Had almost no focus on kanji at all, because you know kanji's hard, and I'd rather just not think about it. Since hey, there's already another way that I can write all these words, so who cares? And yeah, I think that's maybe a fairly typical opinion to have in my class. And I became a big sort of grammar fiend. I would, maybe because I could understand it easily or something like that, maybe because I had some, my major was actually in writing. It was in, the course was called, I can't remember. It's called Professional Writing and Editing. That's what it was called. And so I did a lot of art subjects, where literature-based subjects and things like that. So I was very familiar with rules, with language rules. And so I maybe reading some Japanese language rules in the form of Japanese grammar was, I don't know, it was easier for me to understand or something like that. And so I was I would soak all of that up, and I'd study those grammar patterns, and I'd study the 3 or 4 or 5 example sentences for each grammar, and really try and kind of get it in my brain to the point now where I think I know all of the most of the ways to call the major ways that the verbs in Japanese change forms and all of those sorts of things. I know all the ways of calling all of those in their sort of in the sort of technical terminology. I still know all that just because of that, you know, intensive study. And then I studied vocabulary in just from the book. The book I was using wasn't Japanese for Busy People. It was a book called Yokso. And I think the book is made for the classroom environment because it seems to have gaps which are there deliberately for maybe for the teacher to fill in or something like that. And it also, it goes through at a very, very brisk pace, which, you know, that would make sense too if it was a classroom-based thing, because it would be sort of every 3 or 4 pages, so that would be the equivalent of a week worth of classes. And then I would study the list of vocabulary over and over and over again. And I didn't revise it at all after I'd maybe finished the test and got nice score on the test. I would just normally forget about most of the words directly after that. And, I similar to you, I got really good results too. I got the equivalent of an A++, or maybe not A++, I got the equivalent of an A+ or an A, which is called HD in the... it's not high definition, it means high distinction in the Australian. As far as I'm not sure if it's all across Australia or if it might just be Victoria where I'm from. But yeah, it's a HD system, at least in Victoria. And then it goes HD, D, and then C, and then you start getting into the lower grades, like P, just a passing grade. And I almost always got HDs for all of my... tests and all of my my results and everything for Japanese, so that really kind of spurred me on to keep on studying. But the way that I was studying, as you can probably tell, wasn't exactly ideal. How about when you went into the intermediate? How did you sort of transition into that phase?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, the classes finished in April, so from April until September of the next year, during that free time, I decided to start consuming a lot more Japanese media. So I started watching a lot of like dramas, like just some dramas that Japanese friends recommended. Like I think at the time I was watching something called, I think it was called Orange Days. It's about some people speaking sign language and stuff.
Yeah, it's really famous. It's really famous as one of the great Japanese dramas.
Yeah, yeah. It was all right, you know. What else did I watch? I watched, I started watching, what else did I watch? I don't know. I think at that time it was mainly like movies and stuff. Like I started watching like Japanese movies like The Ring and Ju-on. I don't really know how useful that is to learn Japanese. But a bunch of stuff like that. I started watching a little bit of anime. I think at that time, I was just watching like the popular anime on the ones that were released on like DVD, like the really popular ones. I think at this time it was a little bit before like torrents and all the high-speed downloads. So I think I was actually renting them at, like, the video store or something.
And so you were in Canada, right, during this time?
Yes, I was in Canada.
Yeah.
Or actually, yes, I was in Canada. I'm not confused about that. But so actually at this time, yes, at this time I started watching, like, different anime, all kinds of stuff, not just movies. But... yeah, so I was hearing a lot of Japanese every day, because I created like a Japanese bubble. I was listening to about 3 to 5 hours of Japanese a day, roughly. And yeah, this was mainly like all stuff that I was downloading on my computer. I don't know if I should be saying that. I erased everything. The evidence is gone. But actually, a lot of the stuff was rentals, though. Like, I had rented a bunch of the stuff. And I just switched the audio to Japanese, and I put English subtitles on it. And I just watched a bunch of stuff over and over again. But when I went into the intermediate level class, this was in my third year of university. My second year, I took beginner. My third year, I took intermediate. So when I started taking the intermediate Japanese, I noticed that my reaction time and my ability to express myself or vocalize my thoughts was a lot, I don't want to say better, but it just seemed a bit more fluent than the other students in my class. Like if the teacher said something to me in Japanese, I was usually able to answer pretty quickly. Other students, when he asked them something, they had a bit of time to think. Like, it may have taken, like, you know, 5 seconds or so. And then they figured out what to say, and then they said it. But usually for me, like, it was just I heard it, and then I answered it directly after. And I think that was all kind of thanks to all the hours that I put in during that spring and summer vacation. It just really improved my fluency, like listening to all that Japanese. I just thought it was a really good decision for me to do. Like I could have been like some other people. Like I know some other people in the class that they bought a bunch of textbooks and they just kept studying, and they practiced kanji for like an hour a day. But I'm not saying that isn't useful, but I don't think they experienced the results or the visible results that I did. Because in the first level, like in the beginner class, we were all roughly the same level. I was maybe a little more motivated than the other students to study. But in terms of ability, we were all about the same. But yeah, when we entered the intermediate class, like I was kind of a bit higher, I think. That sounds kind of like a dick of me to say, but
yeah. Well, I mean, if it was true, then it was true, you know.
Yeah. Also, it's kind of interesting that the beginner class was actually, I think there were two classes of 60 students each.
Wow, that's big, right?
Yeah, it was really, really popular. But in the second year class, I think it was just one class of like 15 or 20 students.
Yeah, I think that's normal. Yeah.
It got cut down pretty heavily. Like, I think some people, they just found it too hard. So basically, the people that kept with it, they were like the elite of the other 100 or so students. And they were mainly, I think it was like all Chinese. Like, I think there were two or three Canadians. Or no, I think there were about four Canadians, and the other 10, 15, whatever, they were all like Chinese or Taiwanese.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So that was my lower intermediate. Yeah. How about you? What was yours like?
Before I get on to me, I just wanted to ask you one quick question. I'm really interested in that time where you started, you know, watching dramas and started watching anime and stuff. I want to know, what was your frame of mind during that stage? What I mean is, were you thinking, I am doing this to study Japanese, or was it more like you were doing it because they were just anime you wanted to watch? Or what was your sort of frame of mind during that stage?
It was more like, I had it in my awareness that it would probably be useful for my Japanese, but that wasn't my main goal. My main goal was just to watch the show, to see what it was about. And a lot of it, like, if I started watching some movies and some dramas that I just thought, oh, this is terrible, this sucks, I stopped watching them. Like, I only watched shows that I liked, or like shows that I thought were interesting. And if a show was like really interesting, I may have watched it three or four times. The same episode. I may have watched it like two, three, four times. Like, I was never thinking about it, oh, I'm studying Japanese, I have to study this. It was more like, I'm going to read the English and hopefully the Japanese will somehow be absorbed.
Yep.
And I think maybe for like the first month or so, I probably understood very, very little. But just eventually, I just started progressing and understanding more and more. And of course, it was specific to the show that I watched. Like, if I was watching like a anime, like I can't remember what I was watching at that time, but maybe something like Naruto or something. If I was watching Naruto, I was becoming more proficient in the Japanese in Naruto.
Yep.
Maybe not specifically like the Japanese that would happen on like another show.
Yep.
You kind of compartmentalize. What am I trying to say?
No, I think you said it. I think you said it correctly.
Yeah, it's been a long day. But I think when you're a very, very low level, when you're at the beginner level, I think you really have to section your ability off. Like, you can't just watch one show and understand all of it, then expect to be fluent in the language. Like, you're just going to have to branch out into different topics.
Yep.
And you can do that through different shows.
Yeah.
That's basically what happened for me. I guess I was lucky that I found a bunch of shows that I liked, because I was very quick to stop watching something that I thought really sucked.
That's great. Yeah, that's a kind of a method that I employ now a lot. And that's it's beautiful. It's beautiful that you just watch, because I'm normally interested in a show for one episode or two episodes, and then by the end of the second episode, I just, I mean, I've, like, you know, I just realize how crap the show is, and I just throw it out. But it's normally most shows are good for two episodes, and that's good. You know, you just get to try. You can try endless, you know, different shows, two episodes at a time.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, as for me and my intermediate, my lower intermediate journey, that all happened back in school, back in university in Australia. I didn't have that wake up like you did, where you started watching actual real Japanese material made for Japanese people.
You hit it right there. That's definitely the most important. Use native materials. Like, expose yourself to native stuff. Don't just use textbooks. Textbooks work, they help, but it should be a supplement. It shouldn't be your main source of study.
Well, I was under that false impression, like maybe a lot of people are, that or were in the past, that textbooks are like a way of, you know, cutting corners. You can essentially accelerate your Japanese learning or your language learning or whatever by reading a textbook on the subject, and because that's what a textbook is. It's like, you know, a book that is essentially the all the best bits, you know, so that when you know those bits, you can easily glide past most of the hurdles. But that's just, unfortunately, that just wasn't the case. But I still continue to believe that for many years. I studied Japanese in university for a total of 4 years, including a final year at the end, which was heavily based on Keigo, which seemed a bit silly at the time. It seemed very hard at the time. It seems silly now in hindsight to be learning Keigo in at such a fairly low level of Japanese ability, but hey. And I was consistently getting really high scores as well. So if you're getting really high scores, you know, it's hard to justify why an extra hours upon hours upon hours upon hours of studying the subject would be necessarily a good idea. You gotta think of the way that I just referred to it then as a subject, you know, maybe that's the way that I was thinking about Japanese at the time. As silly as it sounds now, I wasn't truly thinking of Japanese as a language. It was a subject that I was going really well in. And so it stayed that way for quite a long time. I progressed, kept on learning that grammar, kept on studying those vocabulary, started kind of getting more into kanji. I wasn't very good at writing them, but I got a bit better at recognizing them, I mean, a tiny bit. And then I kept on getting really good scores on all the tests that I was studying for the night before, or 15 minutes before before I had to do it. Kept on getting those great marks. And then just kept on progressing in that way. Of course, busy from all of the other subjects and stuff I was doing too. And eventually just got sort of out of the beginner stage and into the very, very, very beginning of the intermediate stage, the lower intermediate stage. I think when I left school, when I finally sort of walked out of the front gate, you know, I think I was, how old was I? Maybe 20, 25 or something at the time. When I finally did that, I was, I think I was at a fairly shallow lower intermediate level. And then from there, I pretty much stopped Japanese altogether. I didn't have any classes to go to anymore. So I pretty much stopped Japanese altogether as I became a teacher in Australia. And I taught in Australia as a teacher in a high school or in high schools for a year. And that was probably the hardest year of my life so far.
You weren't studying Japanese at all at that point?
No, sometimes I'd go through phases of trying to study a little bit, but most of the time, that was my year of massive video games. I mean, I just buried myself in video games. I played a lot of Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2 and Dragon Age and a lot of other kind of, you know, fairly long RPGs like that. And I was really into video games and just couldn't possibly consider actually sitting down with a textbook or sitting down with some other method of studying Japanese and actually going through it. And so, no way, I get home from work and I'm just, my mind is fried. And I put on quite a lot of weight during that time and everything, had a lot of stress in my life, and as a lot of my worst habits started to kind of rear their ugly head around that that stage. After that year, I decided, no, that's it. I need to move to Japan and do what I'm doing now. And then when I finally got the job, and I got the job fairly early, there was about a 4-month wait or so before I was essentially needed to go to Japan. And so during that 4 months, I worked for a little while, teaching. And then I quit the teaching and just moved back in with my parents, which sounds, lame, but it gave me a great opportunity to just study almost every single day. And I started studying Japanese, and I started going online and researching ways that you could, you can almost hear the Rocky music, can't you? But I started going online and started, found all the websites, many of which I still use now. And then the ways and the means that a lot of these websites would talk about, I definitely still use now, such as Anki being a huge one and things like that. And I just kept on. I didn't really do much kanji study still. But I found better ways to memorize things. I started to realize that the textbooks that I'd been using weren't getting me anywhere. And I started thinking, hey, maybe I should actually watch some native material. Started doing a little bit of that and just generally studied a lot for about 4 months or 3 months before I went to Japan. And then really, my true Japanese journey, or my true intensive Japanese journey, only really started when I arrived in Japan. The huge shock of it not understanding much at all. I remember very distinctly watching the news and asking people what kiken meant, for example, or seeing that on signs all the time, because I only ever knew the word abunai. And so, yeah, and just if words as fundamental as that, and I didn't know what umai meant either, umai. I only knew oishi. Very fundamental things like that, just us learning those, and just getting better and better and better. And my methods have been perfecting over time, and I know the lower intermediate journey very clearly, because it's not in my distant past like it might be for you. It's pretty much recent. It's very recent history. I remember the dramas. I remember the anime. I remember the books. I mean, I remember when I first read a book, because the first book I read and finished was last year. I started my first book last year and I finished my first book last year in about May. And so, yeah, it's only because I've been working really, really hard over the last year and a half or so that I've actually gotten to the level that I am now, which is maybe starting to approach that sort of upper intermediate level. That's it for me for that stage. But how about you, Derek? How did you get into the sort of upper intermediate area?
I think upper intermediate was probably the longest time phase for me. Upper intermediate would start towards near the end of my intermediate Japanese class, until probably like 4 or 5 years later in Japan. So I'll start from the beginning. So in my advanced Japanese class, that was in my fourth year university, third year of Japanese. During that time, I was watching a lot of anime and TV shows, probably an hour or two a day. Also, at that time, I had some Japanese friends, and I was talking with them a lot in Japanese. This was in Canada. And also, I met someone through an exchange program. There was a little sister school that was attached to the university that I was taking the Japanese classes. It's called the TESOL Center, basically where students learning English, they study there for a year or two, and then they can enter the real university. That TESOL Center, they had a program where you could volunteer an hour of your time to teach someone English, and then that person would teach you their language for an hour. It was like a 1 hour exchange. So 1 hour each, I guess. And I applied for that program and I got a Japanese girl and we started exchanging. And I don't know if it was just because of her or because of some other girls that I hung out with, but initially they kind of thought my Japanese was a little too formal, a little too textbook. And a lot of people said that, not just the girls, but some of my guy friends too. They all said it was a little too formal, too textbook. And then maybe from the influence from being around these girls and talking with girls a lot, because there actually weren't that many Japanese guys. I only had like one or two Japanese guy friends, and they were all like working a lot, and they were university students, so we didn't get to hang out too much. And they usually had like a really high English level, so we never bothered talking in Japanese. We just talked in English. But with these girls, I guess maybe I picked up on their speaking habits or something, because sometimes when I would talk with guys, they would say, like, man, your Japanese is so weird. You sound like a girl. And I couldn't understand, because I don't think English is as gendered as Japanese. But anyway, like, these guys, they always said, like, you know, you sound kind of girly. And I just thought, well, I'm a guy, you know. I play all kinds of sports, and my voice isn't that high. You know, I just didn't get it.
Yeah.
But I guess I got kind of self-conscious about that, and I started watching like some really violent anime and violent movies with yakuza or like gangsters, and just things that would never be marketed to young girls. Just only guys are like, you know what the demographic that I'm talking about.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I started watching a lot of stuff like that, and to try and avoid the girl talk, I started imitating those people. And I guess, see, reading the subtitles, I kind of assumed, you know, it was pretty close to the English, but in fact, the Japanese that was being said would almost never be used in a real-life situation unless you were threatening to kill someone or fighting for your life or something.
Yep.
But I thought it was normal, so I started speaking like that, and then just people really got freaked out and thought I was some kind of gangster. And I probably gave some people the wrong impression.
Yeah.
So, going through that phase of, like, too textbook, too girly, too gangster, to actually getting mature Japanese, like adult Japanese, that was pretty hard. And that happened for me in Japan. It was really, I didn't mention this, but, like, the coming to Japan and having, like, a background in Japanese was so useful. My Japanese wasn't proficient at all. I had a lot of trouble communicating well with people in native Japanese. 'Cause in Canada, like, the Japanese people there, they're a lot more laid back. They don't use the formalities at all like they do, like Japanese people do in Japan. So it was a lot more comfortable speaking in Japanese in Canada because everyone was just more laid back. But when I came to Japan, I had trouble understanding all the formal talk, and things are a lot more indirect in Japan. When people are speaking Japanese. So I had a lot of trouble with that because I would say things too directly in the past, too literally. But in real Japanese, a more advanced Japanese, like, you should say things kind of more vaguely or indirectly, or you should never vocalize your thoughts too clearly. Well, you can, but it's just not, it wouldn't be considered, I think, mature Japanese. So just that phase, that upper intermediate phase, was really long for me. But it was definitely enjoyable. I really enjoyed all the mistakes that I made, and I learned a lot from them. I can't really say too much good about myself in terms of my experience learning Japanese, but I think my best attribute was I never really cared. I never really took it to the heart too much. Whenever something happened or whenever I made like a mistake, I just kind of soldiered on and to, like, for example, when someone told me my Japanese was too girly, it bothered me for a couple seconds, but then I had another plan. My plan was to learn manly Japanese. And then when people thought I was, you know,
too manly,
I just kind of shut myself into a dark room for about a week. To learn more mature Japanese, I just started watching more realistic dramas, like everyday situations, and watching the news. How about you, Nick? Tell me about your upper intermediate.
I'm not really sure how far along on that whole upper intermediate thing I am. I can really sympathize, or empathize, I should say, with what you were saying about not taking too much to heart with making mistakes. It almost becomes boring. Making mistakes becomes boring, you know?
Yeah.
I'm so used to making mistakes now. Like, oh yeah, that's right, I said that wrong. Sometimes it's that typical thing, you're walking to the car and you think, oh, of course, I could have just said it like that and saved myself all the trouble. Mm-hmm. Or the word that you're trying to think of suddenly comes back to you. I mean, even just today, you know, mid-sentence, I just can't remember the word that I need, which absolutely I desperately need to complete this sentence for the sentence to make sense. I just forgot the word. Oop. You know, that's a bit rarer these days, but... normally I can dance around it until I get to it, but in any case, it's very common, so I know exactly what you're talking about. And then during this stage, I'm in upper intermediate at the moment. I can't really talk about advanced because I'm not in that stage. And thank you for telling me that your upper intermediate stage was the longest. I've got a lot to look forward to.
Well, it was for me.
Yeah, I would imagine it would just be for me too. I mean, I tend to think that every stage has sort of been longer than the last. So, unfortunately for you, it might mean that that advanced and even getting into more of that sort of fluent or native level stuff is probably going to be even longer still. But as for me personally, I'm not sure how far I am into upper intermediate, but I know that... this is a beautiful stage. It's a really great stage when you can finally sort of wave goodbye to English and you can finally start chilling out a little bit. You can, you've got another way. You've normally have another one or even two or three ways of saying ideas. And so you can normally try your luck at saying it a different way if something doesn't work, and you've got a backup plan, which is really, really valuable. And... just think of how many times you don't hear someone when they're speaking English, or you have to sort of say, oh, sorry, what was that? And things like that. I mean, there's a lot more of that when you're learning Japanese, but, you know, often you learn ways of rephrasing things, you know, when you can tell that someone doesn't really understand what you're saying or whatever. And then, yeah, it's also a great stage too, because you actually start to get what all of the material that you've been devouring, you start actually getting the benefits that those kind of materials have for native speakers. So you start getting the benefits of, oh, this is a good story, rather than this is a good thing that I can learn off, you know? Like you still learn a lot, sure, but the percentage of it is enjoyable as a piece of art versus it's enjoyable as something that you study, you know, it becomes maybe, depending on the resource, it becomes more leaning towards the art direction, which is just really great. It's you actually get to enjoy all of the things that might have been your original dream when you first started learning Japanese, say, if your dream was to read from a famous author or something like that. You finally get to read those, and you finally get to understand them as they were intended for native speakers. And I think that's really just sort of great. That's a really great thing. Sorry, were you going to say something?
I just wanted to say that's a great point, yeah. Because at the upper intermediate level, you're looking at content not in terms of for study's sake, but you're looking at content in terms of to enjoy it, usually.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're just reading it, and you either like it or you don't like it. It's not, oh, I can't understand it.
Yeah, yeah, and it's that thing now where if I'm reading a book, for example, it's not really the sort of thing. I mean, I still only really read sort of books made for kids. I don't mean really little kids. I mean, yeah, books made for say grade 5, grade 6, sort of maybe level, and so. And so when I'm reading those, it used to be every sentence there'd be one or two words I didn't understand. And it's just so great these days that it's really sometimes like maybe 5 words a page. And that's just wonderful. And most of the time those 5 words, or at least maybe 2 of those 5 words, I can figure out on context. You know, so it's getting to be really rewarding as far as that's concerned. It's like, it seems so obvious that all the effort is paying off finally. And so that's just a great... I feel really happy to be learning Japanese at the moment. I enjoy doing it, and I do it almost every day, and I enjoy it almost every time I do it. How about you? How about you, like, when you're getting into the more advanced level? That's a mystery to me. Tell me about that.
I just want to ask one thing before I get into that. I just wanted to ask, how has your studying changed? Like, if you compared your upper intermediate level studying versus your beginner level, like, what's been the main difference?
Well, I've come to rely on a system more now. That I've come to understand maybe the importance of systems more generally, and that you can rely on systems like Anki is a great system, for example. You know, you can rely on systems to give you information possibly when you need it the most. And so, I mean, and little rules that I've learned along the way. Like, for example, if there is a line or if there is a section in a drama that is just way too hard, rather than just, you know, really trying to study it for hours and hours and hours on end, my time might be better spent just clicking past that scene for the minute that scene takes, and just watching the next scene. And I have a little bit, man, I don't get to understand that scene though. I do get a bit of that feeling, but then I'm back to enjoying the show again, you know. So I've become much better at skipping things that I don't understand and not getting too upset or annoyed about that. And then it's more important to me that I just keep on pushing ahead and keep on trying to learn what I can. Maybe that's a good point to emphasize, is that I've become more able to properly understand what I can understand and what I can go to next, where I can go. And so knowing my limitations in that way. So on that note, do you have anything like that that you remember from your upper intermediate stage that you can add to that point?
No, I don't. So in terms of advanced, I think I only entered this level maybe a few years ago, 2-3 years ago or so. What I consider advanced is just someone who doesn't really have to study directly anymore. It's not really necessary for you to study the language so much in terms of buying textbooks, but it's someone that just basically reads books in Japanese, and you can talk comfortably in Japanese about a variety of topics. So I think for me, the hardest part was adjusting to be able to talk to different levels of people. So for example, talking to like a superior, or like if you're talking to the mayor, how you should talk to them, how you're talking to like one of your male friends, how you're talking to one of your female friends, how you're talking to like a random stranger, how you would explain something to like young little kids in simple Japanese. I think being able to express yourself properly in all those situations, I think that's what I would consider advanced. And of course, being able to read. I don't think I really have a great writing ability yet in terms of kanji. I can probably write at roughly maybe like grade 6 or grade 7 level. So that would be like the first year of junior high school in Japan. Maybe around that level. In terms of reading, though, I think I'm pretty much okay. I have trouble reading like the newspaper, or like if I'm reading some kind of documents that I'm unfamiliar with. But for me, the main way that I study now is whenever I come across words or vocabulary that I don't understand, or grammar that I don't understand, I'll add it to my Anki deck. And that's basically it. That's the only way that I really study now. I'm exposing myself to Japanese a lot. I try to read a little bit in Japanese every day. I have random books about gardening or agriculture, health, sports. I read a lot of stuff on Twitter too, and on Facebook. I read online articles, like news articles, a lot. And whenever I don't understand any of the content in there, especially if it's something that relates to me, what I'll do is I'll just add that to my Anki deck.
Yep.
And I'll just kind of review those words. And yeah, that's about it. That's how I study now. If I am an advanced student, that's
So yeah, it definitely sounds like you've slowed down though in comparison to lower intermediate and upper intermediate. Would you say that's where you were going the fastest?
I think my upper intermediate to advanced kind of happened a bit quickly. I think the upper intermediate phase was pretty long, but once I got into a Japanese environment, the current job that I have now, I'm using Japanese every day, and I have to use Japanese every day and explaining stuff to people in Japanese. And occasionally doing presentations in Japanese. I remember the first time I did a presentation in front of like, what, maybe 120 people in Japanese, just talking about like the importance of setting goals and having a plan. I was really nervous about doing that. It was just, basically, I just had a cue card with a few points that I wanted to say, but I had to talk for about 5 minutes or so. It was really hard. I guess I'd be nervous doing that in English too, but I knew what I had to say, but just doing it in Japanese was pretty hard. But basically, being in this kind of environment where it's expected of you or it's demanded of you to have some ability in Japanese, it pulls you. It pulls you to a higher level. Like, yep. It depends. Like, some people, they may not respond well to it. Like, some people, they may just be aversive to the progress. But I accepted it, and I used it to my own advantage.
Yeah, I think the reason why people might be, you know, opposed to the idea is just because it feels like you're just continuously hitting up against this thing, and you're studying and studying and studying, and it's hard to do all that study, and there just doesn't seem to be really any result. And I think it's one of the great things about getting to that lower intermediate or the upper intermediate level, certainly, is you start to realize that that wall is finally starting to give, and there actually is some beautiful shining light on the other side. I mean, there actually is meaning, and there is expression, and there is, like, there are stories which actually make you laugh, and there are jokes which you're starting to understand, and there's all these things which had always been maybe pipe dreams that are just, I mean, you always knew they must be the reality of a culture, but you just can't haven't experienced yet, that are actually starting to become real. And I think that's a really great moment when you're learning, but I can understand why so many people are opposed to it, because, I mean, it just takes such a long time, and it's really, really quite it can be quite a grueling process.
I think people expect too much of themselves. They expect themselves to be fluent in Japanese within, like, you know, a few months or so. It's not possible. It takes time. In comparison to other languages, for English learners, like, it's a lot more difficult. It's going to take a lot more time than it would for an English speaker to learn German or to learn French. I think just bear with it. Just keep studying. If you enjoy it, just keep following, keep going, keep moving forward, and try not to get too discouraged when you have trouble.
A metaphor.
It'll be worth it.
Yeah, that's right. And something that I started to think of is, really though, if you consider an almost native level of Japanese or a highly fluent level of Japanese ability in a non-native Japanese speaker, it's really just at the very highest pinnacle of what would be the highest pinnacle in any field. I mean, you can't really imagine higher, and it's just the same as any other thing which is extremely hard to acquire. I mean, of all of the, it's so much harder to become, you know, like a brain surgeon. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the top 2 or 1% of all of the surgeons in the world become brain surgeons, and surgeons themselves are amazing, you know? Yep. And so it's sort of like getting to that native level, I mean, where everything is seamless, or getting to a very near native level, where, you know, where everything is kind of a lot easier. It's really equivalent, I think, to basically the sort of brain surgery. And so, or, you know, everyone says a rocket scientist or something, you know. Like, they imagine that's the hardest type of science or something like that. It's really the pinnacle. So of course it's hard. I mean, the pinnacle of everything, of any major discipline, is hard. You know, the all-time best piano players they've just put in so much time. The all-time best writers or journalists have just put in so much time and so much effort and so much experience. I mean, so of course it's going to be that case for learning a language. There's no way to become the pinnacle of anything without, you know, having a lot of battle scars and having a lot of experience on the field, and just a lot of setbacks and whatnot. Yeah.
Okay, everybody. This episode was a little bit of a double whammy. We usually try to keep our episodes at around 30 minutes or so, but today's topic, just there was too much to say. We could probably both go on for another hour each. So we're just going to end it here, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Okay, thanks for listening to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. Send your questions to glj@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions on the show.